Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey guys, what's up? Kevin Jones, founder of Blue Wire. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, send it to one of your friends. We're growing this network, grassroots style. It takes everyone. You're a part of our team if you send this to one of your friends. All right, enjoy this podcast and appreciate your support.
Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to In the Know. We are very happy to welcome Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation, who is going to be joining us to talk about potential draft prospects and kind of the madness that happened around the lottery. Ricky, how are you doing?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we are very excited. Now, the first thing, just to kind of get it out of the way, what were your reactions on draft night? If you could kind of walk us through the whole process where you're watching the lottery unfold. I'm not draft flight, lottery. If, when you're watching the lottery unfold and seeing which teams were getting which picks, and then you being a Chicago fan, what was your feeling when Chicago's name came up where it did, and then how the rest of the lottery played out?
Yeah, well, I cover the draft for my job at SB Nation. That's one of my beats along with college basketball. So I had spent that entire day basically writing a mock draft that I was going to shuffle the blurbs around depending on how the teams played out and then publish it. So I was watching it on ESPN in my apartment, but the people in our work chat room were like ahead of me. So I was getting all their reactions before I could actually see it for myself. And I mean, just unbelievable. The Pelicans able to win the lottery for the second time this decade. What do they have, like a 6% chance to win it all? I think that, you know, the first year, it certainly seems like what the NBA was intending to accomplish with lottery reform, it certainly did. My initial reaction, just covering it from afar, from, you know, a little bit of like a player-based point instead of like from the college angle, instead of viewing it from a team's perspective, was I wonder how Zion felt about it. And I think everyone saw that initial report from Mark Spears that maybe he was disappointed a bit that he didn't end up in New York. I'm sure that, you know, he probably never considered the fact that New Orleans could jump up from a 6% chance to win. But everything we've heard, you know, in the last week or so that's followed since, and all the moves the Pelicans have made with David Griffin, with Trajan Langdon being added as the GM this past week, you know, the training staff being overhauled, I think there's now a lot of reasons for Zion himself to feel positive about the Pelicans moving forward. And to me, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think everyone here is kind of processing what this is all going to look like, and everyone has their idea of what they want the future to turn out to be. And it's everyone's just lost in a bunch of excitement. Now, I have a couple questions. Pelicans fans are concerned that when they trade for when they move Anthony Davis, they're going to perhaps land up with the number three pick or the number four pick. Now, there's a lot of talk of this draft being a two-person draft. How do you weigh the strength of the prospects in this? And is that even a thing you can feasibly do pre-draft or, you know, before these players are drafted and have played in the league a couple years?
I would say it's a one-player draft. I would take Zion ahead of the rest of the top 10 combined, if I'm being totally honest. Pelicans already have that pick. So for them, I think everything's gravy. But like you said, the reality of the situation is they're going to have to move Anthony Davis. You know, getting premium draft compensation, I think, is going to be towards the top of their goals. I do think that Zion's going to peak earlier than a lot of other one-and-done freshmen. It's hard for me to think of what a 30-year-old Zion Williamson looks like. I think he's going to be at his best while he's young, while he's at his healthiest. While his athleticism is at its absolute peak, obviously he's going to improve skill-wise as a ball handler, as a shooter, and in a lot of other areas. But I really do think he could make a gigantic impact from his rookie year in that, you know, the Pelicans shouldn't really be thinking like super long-term with him, because I think he's going to be ready to go pretty soon. So I guess if I'm the Pelicans, I would probably want to target one productive young player, someone who's already good, over valuing those picks, if that's really the question. Because while I think Ja Morant is an interesting project with a little bit of star potential, to me, I mean, I don't think he's a slam dunk to be a really good NBA player by any stretch. Barrett, I do think some people are sleeping on a bit because, you know, he really exposed some warts in his game, I think, during his 1 year at Duke playing with Zion. But I still think that he is a good prospect if you view him in a vacuum. So to me, I'd probably value young veterans over premium picks in this draft. But, you know, that's going to have to be one of the first choices David Griffin makes as he reignites these trade talks.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I want to press on a little one thing you said that I particularly enjoy, and I agree with it, about how you take Zion over the rest of the top 10 combined. So
I thought you were going to press on young vets. You had the perfect setup there, Mason.
No, this is a different era, man. So it's, I don't even have to ask you to make the case for Zion over Morant, why that's such a slam dunk, because you kind of already alluded to it. But can you talk a little bit more for those who – maybe have just watched him, Zion Williamson, within his role at Duke, and maybe haven't done the type of research you have, and the amount of time you followed his career, even back to his high school days. What is it about Zion's skill set that makes him so dynamic regarding where he could play on the floor on both ends of the ball? I think our listeners would be really happy to hear about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that jumps out to me about Zion is in a league that's becoming so positionless, where positionless has become the buzzword around the league, he's like the most positionless prospect I can ever remember. I think that he has just immense potential on both ends of the floor. You know, if you're projecting him out into the NBA, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, it's like he could be a center on defense, which I think could be really beneficial. On offense, I would develop him as a lead initiator, sort of the way that, you know, Milwaukee once developed Giannis, kind of how Philadelphia uses Ben Simmons a lot of the time, where I would run the offense through Zion as a ball handler. I think, you know, he was devastating in college in both isolation situations and in pick and roll situations as the ball handler. Synergy stats were through the roof. Obviously, he is going to have to improve as a ball handler, as a passer, and just sort of like the mechanics of running an offense, because, you know, besides for early in his high school career, he typically hasn't been someone who's been the de facto point guard. But man, when he had those opportunities for Duke, I thought he was tremendous. And really, you know, if you're going to have immense value as like a top 10, even top 5 NBA player one day, which I think is the type of potential and the type of ceiling Zion has, those players almost all play on the ball and initiate the offense. So that's where I would develop him. I've been following his career for a long time. On the cusp of his senior year of high school, I flew out to Colorado Springs to USA basketball camp, USA junior mini camp. So it's like 60 of the top players across every class, and the seniors are competing for spots on the Nike Hoop Summit team. And then USA Basketball is also choosing players for like its U14, U15, U16 teams when those FIBA tournaments come up. I went there to watch Zion because, you know, he wasn't someone who played a lot on the AAU circuit. He had this massive following, mostly through the strength of his mixtapes. And what I saw immediately was a player who was just so much more than a dunker. I think that, you know, when he took the floor at Duke, that was what was really striking to people. Now, even when I saw him at USA Basketball Camp, I still had some questions about how his game would translate to the NBA as he was making the jump from college to the pros. I think I had him like 4th or 5th in my initial mock draft at SB Nation, which I did in June, right after the previous draft ended. And I wouldn't even say that Zion so much as answered those questions during his one season at Duke in terms of, you know, what position does he play? Can he shoot? How does he fit it into the league? He just rendered them all completely meaningless because his dominance was so apparent on both ends of the court. You know, in a lot of ways, I think he overshadowed the entire sport of college basketball last year. So I think he's just a tremendous prospect, unquestionably a foundational piece. Really, the only question I have with him is his durability, because we haven't really seen a player that explosive carrying that much weight at that height. You know, he's like, you can frame him in a lot of different ways, but you know, his first step quickness reminds me a lot of watching prime Derrick Rose back in the day as a Bulls fan. Just 285, to me, he's probably gonna need to slim down. He's had some injuries at the high school level. He had the injury at Duke this year. So durability is really my only question long term, but otherwise I think he's a tremendous player, and the Pelicans and Pelicans fans are gonna be so lucky to have him.
Man, before I know Schmidt's going to jump in here, but you mentioned that Derrick Rose, and I think I was actually talking to someone about this today. I saw I went to Tulane for undergrad, and I went to very few Tulane basketball games, but the one game I made sure to go to and get as close to the front as I could was that Derrick Rose Memphis team, and how. It was incredible to watch him at that young age. He was just so dominant, and not obviously the everything that's happened since then obviously puts a lot of things in question, but the watching him play as a freshman at Memphis was really something to watch.
I'm just really happy about everything Ricky mentioned on playing Zion as an initiator. I think one of the first few texts I sent a couple friends after we got the pick, I was like, I want Zion running a million pick and rolls next year, and not as the roll man, but as the ball handler. Like, just let him go out there, fail, learn how to make reads, learn how to just function in the modern NBA offense, because ultimately that's how you're going to maximize his ceiling. I'm sure he'll be a devastating roll man and play the role of a big man really well just because of his athleticism. And you'll probably see him have similar gravity to some like the premier bigs in this league. But if you really want him to impact the game, he's got to be the ball handler on those pick and rolls. So I'm really excited about that. Now, Ricky, I do have a couple questions. I think the major concerns outside of durability that surround Zion are, one, how do you see his stature, as in his height and his length, impacting his ability to play defense at the next level? Like, can he be an effective small ball five? Can he be a effective big full time? And then two, what do you make of his shot mechanics? How much room is there to improve to be just a credible shooter, both from the line and from deep?
Yeah, I think in terms of his position, I mean, you know, in a league that switches screens more than ever, isn't Zion the ultimate switch defender? I mean, he's got the quickness to pretty much corral any ball handler. Obviously, he's got the strength to handle centers inside and the explosiveness to still block shots. Obviously, he is at a height and wingspan disadvantage. I think only a 6'10 wingspan. His standing reach wasn't super impressive either. But I think he has great defensive potential because, you know, he just has a nose for the ball and he's so engaged mentally in terms of, you know, sniffing out plays before they even happen. I think sort of is in like an off-ball roamer role. He can just be unbelievable because he gets into the passing lanes, blows things up, can provide great value as a supplemental shot blocker on the weak side. So I really like Zion's defensive potential. Like, you know, I could see him in a lot of lineups playing center on defense, point guard on offense. You could just move him all around the chessboard because he's capable of doing so many different things. In terms of the shot, I think that if he can shoot like Giannis, that would probably be a success for the Pelicans, and maybe he'll shoot better than that. I do think that, you know, his shot looks decent from a standstill. I don't think he's going to project to someone who's ever, like, bombing threes off the dribble the way Damian Lillard does. But as a catch-and-shoot threat, I think he can be respectable enough, and then he's also going to be someone who will be so dynamic attacking a closeout. So I would actually anticipate him to become, I don't know, maybe a 35-34% three-point shooter, mostly on catch and shoots. He'll be low volume, but even if he does that, he's really going to make defenses respect him.
I think that's a good baseline that makes sure fans aren't expecting too much too soon. This guy's going to be dominant in so many ways, and even if he isn't a league average 3-point shooter from the start, it's, again, he's young and there's, I think there's still room to improve. But so moving away from Zion, I think we've got everybody sufficiently excited about him. There's a lot of uncertainty beyond that for the Pelicans throughout the rest of the first round, obviously, as it relates to the Anthony Davis trade. It could be Barrett if they trade with the Knicks, or it could be something different. So the Lakers have the fourth pick. The Celtics obviously have some picks a little later in the first round. Let's start with four, though. I mean, it feels like it's a three-player draft, or as you said, a one-player draft. But even after Morant and Barrett, it feels like most people think it falls off a little bit. Is there a guy at four, regardless of what the Pelicans may need, is there a guy at four you're absolutely targeting right now?
I like Jared Culver. I think Jared Culver could easily be the second best player in this draft, though. I think the gap is close enough where you could say that about a lot of guys. I basically had Culver as my number two throughout the year. I still might. I don't know. I was there at the Final Four in Minneapolis, and I think he did show some of his issues in terms of his takeover scoring ability. Usually guys get drafted that high because they can take over games as a scorer. Culver lacks that, but it's everything else that makes him, you know, a viable option as a top five pick. I think that, you know, if you compare him versus DeAndre Hunter, though Hunter certainly got the best of him in the national championship game, there's no doubt about that. I just think Culver's a lot more dynamic with the ball in his hands as a shot creator. In a lot of ways, he can just sort of be a bigger version of Drew Holiday, who's someone who has great defensive versatility, great defensive instincts, can create his own shot with the ball in his hands. Obviously, Holiday is a better shooter. The shooting is Culver's one weakness. He has a little bit of a hitch in his shot. And honestly, doesn't look very good coming out of his hand, but he was still about, I think, a 30-31% three-point shooter this year. I just like his defensive versatility. I like how smart he is. He's a high IQ two-way guy. And, you know, in today's NBA, those are just valued so heavily. Maybe his ceiling is ultimately determined by the jump shot, but I still think he'll bring enough value on offense as, you know, someone who can also run a secondary pick and roll, someone who can finish at the basket as a cutter, someone who could be really good in transition. That I think, you know, Culver would be the guy I'd be looking at number four if the Pelicans were to get that pick.
And do you feel that way even with the Pelicans drafting Zion? Do you see him as a good fit to grow next to a guy like Zion?
Yeah, I guess, like, ideally you probably want four shooters all around Zion. Like in today's NBA, there's really only one spot on the floor, maybe for a non-shooter. And that is a weakness in Culver's game. I would probably just take him because the Pelicans really didn't have much at the two and the three last year. Perhaps someone like Darius Garland would intrigue them because he's definitely the best shooter of the bunch. I think there's some questions about just how high Garland's upside is. I mean, when I watched him and I saw him as a recruit a couple times too on Nike's EYBL circuit, he never looked like someone who'd be a top five pick to me. Like him rising up as a top five pick in a draft where, you know, he didn't play the entire season basically, to me, is more damning on the rest of the freshman class. But you know, he does have avenues for success if he ends up being a really, really good pull-up shooter. And I think ultimately the biggest questions with him are like, how good of a facilitator is he? He had more turnovers and assists during the few games he played at Vanderbilt this year. How much stock do you really put into that? But you know, how elite is his playmaking ability? He's another player the Pelicans could consider at number four, especially with the way they've been using Drew Holiday off the ball the last couple of years.
I feel like you've been living inside my brain, although you've done way more research and way more coverage than I possibly could have. But I share a lot of those same feelings. Now, I want to, you know, we talked about the fourth pick. We've talked about some of the earlier picks. Something that's intrigued a lot of Pelicans fans, and this is what they're trying to talk themselves into, is they're going to have a three-team trade with LA, and they're going to flip Lonzo Ball to the Bulls, perhaps Phoenix, for the sixth or seventh pick. And then now they'll have the fourth pick with the Lakers as well as the sixth or seventh pick. First of all, as a Bulls fan, I want to get your idea on the potential of that happening. And then second of all, even if it's not likely, are there players you like at that range, perhaps more than that you'd feel comfortable drafting as well? You'd feel as comfortable drafting as, let's say, the fourth pick.
Are the Bulls getting Lonzo in this trade? I'm still confused.
Yeah. The Bulls are getting Lonzo.
Yeah, then, and they're giving up seven? Yeah. Hell yeah, I'd do that. I really like Lonzo. Lonzo's been a disappointment, but I was super high on him when he was a prospect. I think he has, you know, he's such an odd player. He has some pretty defined strengths and weaknesses. Obviously, he made, you know, a little bit of noise last year with the rumors that he wouldn't want to come to New Orleans. I'd really like him as a Bulls fan because I think he's a brilliant, you know, playmaker at the point guard position, and he also has so much defensive potential off the ball, just like roaming around making plays. I think he'd cover up Zach LaVine really well in Chicago on the defensive end, and would give him, you know, a heady playmaker to really run the offense through, which is what the Bulls lack right now. So I would love that for the Bulls. From the Pelicans' perspective, if they're getting six or seven, if the Bulls keep that pick, I kind of like Coby White. I don't think that he's like a sure thing to be a stud by any means, but he'd be good for the Pelicans because you need to shoot, you know, you need all the shooters you can get next to Zion. He has some positional versatility where you can play him at the one or the two. In just his catch and shoot ability is so intriguing. I think he was like in the 95th percentile in catch and shoot on Synergy, or 92nd percentile. He was really good in those situations. And you know, my thing with Coby White is like watching the Western semis against the Rockets and the Warriors. Like, I feel like Coby White could have played in that series because the Rockets were rolling out lineups of CP3, Harden, Eric Gordon, Austin Rivers, PJ Tucker. Like, basically, no one's over 6'6". Their goal of those lineups is to just put as much like quickness, shifty ball handling ability, and shooting on the floor at the same time. And I think that Coby White's that kind of player. Like, ideally, you want to always take the highest upside guy and really swing for the fences. There's a chance Coby White ends up being just like a good six-man microwave scorer. But I think that he's a pretty safe bet to at least have a good career and to be the type of player that seems to hold so much value in today's game. So I would like Coby White. I think he'd be good both for the Bulls or for the Pelicans to pair with Zion because of that shooting ability and some of the shiftiness he has in the backcourt. And he's a player who, around pick number six or seven, you'd expect him to be available.
Call me crazy, but I think Coby is the most complete guard in the lottery, or maybe in the draft, right? I think he has the fewest flaws And when I look at him, I see someone that's a tremendous fit next to Drew, and obviously someone that can grow next to Zion. So I'd be pretty ecstatic with getting Kobe at 6 or 7 if the Pelicans do end up making a trade like that. I did want to ask about what you thought about his defensive potential.
I have not heard much about Kobe White's defense following college basketball all year. Really, he was the engine that was driving their offense because Carolina played so, so fast, and Kobe White was helping them do it. I think that's, you know, another thing in his factor. If you're trying to pair him with Zion, like, you would expect those Pelicans teams to crank up the pace, especially in Zion's early years. And Kobe White, I think, could run with Zion, which would be helpful. In terms of his defense, I mean, I don't know. It's tough to say. Like, he's rail thin. I just saw him at the draft combine. I was there in Chicago. I mean, his arms look like a blogger's, sort of. Like, he's not like a physically imposing player by any means. But he's also, what, 19 years old? So he has a negative wingspan, which I think is notable in terms of, like, you know, assessing his defensive potential. Is he a multi-position defender? I don't know. But he has enough size, and I would expect him to not get killed on defense, but it would probably be a struggle early in his career.
Fair enough. We want to get into some of the later picks. Wow, that's a Freudian slip. But before we do that, let's take a moment to pause for our wonderful sponsors.
At Blue Wire, we don't just partner with any advertiser. We want to make sure we're giving our listeners a good deal on a product. That's exactly why we love doing business with Harry's. Harry's is giving Blue Wire listeners a shaving kit for just $3. Go to harrys.com/bluewire, and you'll save $10 on a trial set, which includes 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. If you're not familiar with Harry's, it's time you should be. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. The founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3. Welcome back. We are still joined by Ricky O'Donnell, who, apart from his SB Nation work, is also the co-host with Jason Pat of the wonderful Cash Considerations podcast for the Chicago Bulls and the Blue Wire Network. And so we're gonna jump back in to talk to Ricky a little bit about the back half of the first round. Obviously, no picks for the Pelicans right now in that area. But if they were to trade Anthony Davis to, say, I don't know, the Boston Celtics, they could be looking at quite a few picks between 14 and 22. So 14, 20, 22 are the Celtics picks. And Ricky, any favorites? I know that's kind of a wider range, but anyone you target in that area who you think will be around that could be maybe a little bit undervalued broadly?
Yeah, a couple guys are like, well, I think, you know, if Goga Batadze is still there, I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation of his name, so people from the country of Georgia, please forgive me if I'm mispronouncing it. I think that he's going to be awesome. He's had a really strong stretch of games leading into, you know, this part of the draft process late in EuroLeague. He was the EuroLeague's rising star this year, even though I don't think he even played that many games. Now, I don't know if he's a great fit with Zion. Like, to me, with Zion, you want to surround him with fast guys who can shoot. I think that's really how you probably unlock his potential. But if you do want a more traditional five next to him, I think Goga has, like, some potential as a passer, as a shooter, as a rebounder, just as, like, an overall skilled offensive player. Who will face some questions in terms of his, like, lateral mobility defensively in the pick and roll. I think he'd be pretty interesting if he's still sitting there at 14. I really like PJ Washington from Kentucky, who is a player, I think, who improved as much as anyone in college basketball this year.
We've moved on from Kentucky to Duke in the new era of Pelicans basketball. No Kentucky players anymore.
No, you guys don't hear about PJ Washington. That's fine.
Nah, kidding.
Yeah, no, I like PJ Washington though because he's super strong. He has a 7'3" wingspan, and then the big improvement he made from his freshman to sophomore year this year was just as a jump shooter. He made, I think, like five threes at like under 10% clip, I want to say, as a freshman at Kentucky. And this year he made like 44% of his threes, and he made more than one a game. His shot looked really good. I think he was a good free throw shooter too, though I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. But I really like PJ Washington. I think that he's someone who can stretch the floor a little bit. He can provide some like traditional rebounding, things like that in the front court. And I think, you know, he has the day one physicality to succeed in the league. I like him. Another guy I'll name is Talen Horton Tucker. I saw his high school career develop here in Chicago and went to Simeon Academy, which is the same school D. Rose and Jabari Parker went to. He's really interesting. He's the youngest player projected to be taken in the first round. I don't think he turns 19 years old until October or November. He also has a crazy build, 6'4", about 235, 240 pounds. He has over a 7-foot wingspan as well. So just like a massive difference between his height and his reach. He just jacked up three-pointers during this year at Iowa State, I think. Just the volume of which he was able to get threes up, even though he didn't shoot them that accurately, was really impressive when three-point volume has become such a meaningful statistic in today's NBA. I think he is a guy who could like, potentially develop into someone who just stuffs box scores every night. He can get you some steals and some blocks with that length. Also a pretty good ball handler who can, you know, finish plays or make a play for someone else in transition. He's so young, he might be far away from contributing early in his career, but I do like Talen Horton Tucker. And last two guys I'll name. I saw Lucas Samanic from Croatia at the draft combine. He's huge. They list him at 6'11". I was really impressed with his shooting mechanics, just with his size. His frame looked, he looked like he was pretty jacked. He looked good in every on-court drill I saw him in. So I think that he's someone who could potentially fit well next to Zion at the end of the first round. And I kind of like Cameron Johnson too from North Carolina. He was a senior this year, but he shot like 45% from three. He's got great size at 6'8". If you're just trying to fill up the perimeter with knockdown shooters around Zion Williamson, I think you can do a lot worse than Cameron Johnson.
Oh, you mentioned Talen Horton Tucker. I think he's one of the players I've seen that has some of the better footwork in this draft, and I think that's quite underrated. I want to ask a general question for you, more on draft philosophy. Now, obviously the Pels have a top-tier prospect in Zion just waiting to be drafted. Should that change their approach as to need base or best player available when it comes to evaluating the prospects?
Yeah, I guess to me, like, Zion is going to be everything for the Pelicans moving forward, assuming AD is gone. So you got to draft players who will complement Zion well. I mean, Zion's the franchise, right? Once Anthony Davis is moved. When I'm moving Anthony Davis, I'm thinking about players who will complement Zion well. When I'm making draft picks, I'm thinking about players who complement Zion well. So it is a big philosophy question, obviously. Whatever league's draft you're talking about of fit versus best player available. I think that in a perfect world, you know, those two things overlap, and you just want to take the best player who, you know, fits in with the direction of the team that you're building around Zion, I think.
Fair enough to me. Now, kind of along those lines, there's some pretty interesting boom or bust prospects in this draft, and perhaps none bigger than Bol Bol or Bol Bol. I don't really know how to exactly pronounce his name. He had a shortened stay at Oregon, but you know, his time there, he flashed potential to be a really potent offensive threat at the size of 7'3". How do you view him? What is the earliest you think a team's going to go for him?
Yeah, I actually saw Bol Bol's breakout game as a high school player. It was on Nike EYBL circuit. Around this time, he was viewed as even more of an enigma than he is now, but I want to say he was around like maybe 15 or so in the recruiting rankings at that point. It was in Indianapolis. I was there at the EYBL the whole weekend, and he played against Marvin Bagley, who they were in the same class. Then Bagley ended up reclassifying late in his high school career, going to Duke a year early, starting his NBA career a year early. But Bol Bol dominated Bagley. And I watched that game. I thought that he was unbelievable. I mean, The longest player in the draft with, what, a 7'8 wingspan? I didn't actually see how he measured. And also, like, maybe the best shooter? Him and Darius Garland are probably the two best
shooters. I think Taco Fall had a wingspan over 8 feet, which is absurd.
Sure, I wasn't counting Taco Fall, but that rules. I hope Taco gets drafted. He's a good ambassador for basketball. Seems like a cool guy, too. For Bull, though, I mean, he's a really, really good shooter. So he's just a special talent. I mean, the body is going to have obvious questions because he's kind of slow-footed, especially laterally. He's also real thin. He weighed in at like 206 pounds, 7'2", 206 pounds, I think is what he measured at the combine. He's already had the foot injury that cost him the season at Oregon. He just has such like a bizarre build and like high center of gravity. And so he has some obvious question marks, but man, he's so special as a shooter that I think, you know, even you saw him at Oregon sometimes this year, like taking the ball up the court and being able to do some things off the dribble. I would be really intrigued by Bol Bol, especially because, like, you know, people look at him and probably think that he can't play in a switch-heavy NBA right now. Like, any guard would just burn him on the perimeter, and that probably is true. But who knows what the league's defensive schemes are going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when Bol Bol's 28. If he can stay in the league that long, I mean, you might see more zone defense. Then his length becomes really valuable. He has pretty good shot-blocking instincts. I think he was top 20 in the country in block rate this year at Oregon when he was on the court. So I'm really intrigued by Bol Bol, and I mean, I would take him. Why not in this draft? There doesn't seem like there's much star power after Zion. If you want a shot at it, I think Bol Bol brings it more than almost anyone else.
So I have a question about that type of mindset for this draft, or just any type of draft in this day and age of the NBA. So obviously we've seen in recent years that the prototypical big man or center has changed, and guys that were valuable 5 years ago aren't necessarily that valuable anymore. Do you see anything in any specific skill sets or player types, sizes, et cetera, in current or maybe subsequent draft classes that you think maybe are either being under or overvalued relative to what they could bring to the table for an NBA team, just based on the way the league's trending? So, I mean, look, the obvious candidates are some of the bigger centers like Jackson Hayes or Bruno Fernando. Those guys maybe, I think some fans might say, oh, well, the center is no longer as valuable as it used to be. Is there any other position or skill set type that you think is like maybe that those bigger centers a few years ago?
That's an interesting question. I'm not totally sure. I guess, you know, you guys could answer this as well as I could, but I would probably value like skill, like polished skill, more so than physicality. I guess the French guy whose name I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce, Sekou Doumbouya, yeah, from France. Like, I think that he's intriguing because of his physicality, because he's 6'9", he's big and strong, 230 pounds, I think, really long arms. But some of the clips I've seen of his skill levels looked really unpolished. Now, obviously, he's very young, he's 18 years old, so that can improve. But I guess, I don't know, I would tend to favor skill level over raw size or raw athleticism. That would be my takeaway. I'd be curious how you guys would even answer that question.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if I have a good answer either, but the one thing I noticed looking at a bunch of mock drafts is that apart from Garland and Morant, there's no one in the top 30 that's under 6'5", from what I can see. And so I think that's a change from what we've seen in years past. And I think it's obviously the switchability, the positionless basketball plays in, but I think it's interesting how, to what degree, that height and wingspan has really taken over potential for the draft.
So I have sort of a related question, which is, how high in this draft would you take the first big, and who is that first big?
So I would like to argue my way out of this question by saying Zion's the first big, but how high would I take the first big, and who is the first big? I mean, you know, DeAndre Hunter might be a center in today's NBA with a 7'1" and 220 pounds. He's way bigger than PJ Tucker. You know, at least he's longer. I don't know if he's stronger. So I don't know. I love Brandon Clark, though. He's a true big, I would say, because he's not much of a threat as a shooter from the perimeter, at least. So I'd classify Clark as a true big, even though he's probably not a true five. I think ideally you want him next to a stretch five. If he ends up in Minnesota with Karl Towns, I think that would be super nasty. You know, if he would have ended up in Dallas, potentially next to Porzingis, that could have been good. But I love Brandon Clark. I'd take him in the top 10 for sure. And he's going to be 23 years old as a rookie. But the man is one of the freakiest athletes I've ever seen in my life. I thought he was the best defensive player in college basketball this year. Offensively, just smart, high IQ. I think that that's another thing that I would value in, you know, in draft prospects these days. Just such an efficient finisher, always played within himself, but, you know, would score on putbacks, would score on short rolls to the basket, had a little bit of a floater, not much of a shooter, but just an unbelievably bouncy athlete who can rebound, who always stays engaged, and who has some, I think, a ton of defensive versatility in terms of, you know, blocking shots at the rim, but also defending the perimeter. I would take Brandon Clark in the top 10. He'd be my top big, too.
That's fascinating to me. Like, I think I'm a huge fan of Brandon Clark. I would earlier this year, I was like, I would probably draft him six when the Pelicans were in that range. But I've kind of had a shift in philosophy since then, which is, you know, because bigs are continually being undervalued. And, you know, historically speaking, it seems like you can find role playing bigs later on in the draft, as well as they're probably not hard to acquire around the league, whether it's free agency or in trade. And at a certain point, they have a sort of skill ceiling that is not very favorable to the modern NBA. And that got me thinking, like, do I really want to draft a senior, given that the Pelicans are in a small market and have trouble attracting stars, and perhaps maybe they should take a shot on someone that may bloom into a star? Like, oh, here's a good one for you, Cam Reddish. Like, he didn't have a good year at Duke. By all accounts, Brandon Clark was much better player than Cam Reddish. And he might even be a more productive NBA player. The floor is probably much higher than Cameron Reddish. But if you had to pick on one guy becoming an all-NBA level player, I feel like Reddish has a higher chance than Clark. Am I wrong?
I don't know, man, and that's why Reddish is the most polarizing prospect in this class. I feel like, in a certain sense, like, the best indicator of the question, will you become a good basketball player, is are you a good basketball player already? Because Brandon Clark is. Cam Reddish was kind of terrible, and it pains me to say because I was a huge Reddish guy in the high school circuit. I watched him play in the UIBL. I went that same camp I went to where I wrote about Zion. I also wrote about Reddish, and I had Reddish as the number one player in our first mock draft, even though everyone in the world had Barrett. I just thought that Reddish's length, that his shooting ability, the fact that he played some point guard in high school, and the fact that I just thought he was the best player at USA basketball camp. He was so good in that setting that I thought, you know, Reddish would be the guy to really emerge this year out of this 2018 high school class. Obviously, Zion just left everyone in the dust, and now it's a totally different story. But Reddish, like, I don't know. I don't see why he struggled. Like, why are we framing him playing with Zion and RJ as something that, like, stunted his development? When, to me, they were attracting so much defensive attention. Cam Reddish's life should have been really, really easy. I think you saw it in a lot of ways on the defensive end, where Zion was able to roam around so much that Reddish could just use his length, get into the passing lanes. He had a really impressive steal rate, which is typically a statistic you look for in terms of one that translates from college to the NBA. He's, as a shooter, he's always been better theoretical than he is an actual shooter, but I do think he definitely has potential on that end. He should be a shooter. That should be, you know, the foundation of his value, along with his great positional size and his length. To me, he's sort of a low IQ player. It's not a term I really like to say, because obviously, Reddish is really young. When I've talked to him a few different times, and he's such a nice kid. but I just don't think he made a lot of smart decisions on the floor at Duke. I think that the fact that he shot below 40% inside the arc is pretty troubling. I don't think he had a lot of the athletic explosion of the players he was unfairly being compared to at an early age, like Tracy McGrady and Paul George. So I don't know. I would take Clark over Reddish, but you're right that it's a question. And because of that, Reddish to me feels like the guy who's going to get a GM in this draft fired. You pass on him, he turns out great, you get fired. You take him and he sucks, you get fired. He's like the one like landmine in this draft to me.
Ricky, want to thank you for coming on. I got one more question for you. I thought this would be a good one to put this draft class in perspective, and I thought it'd be really interesting to see what your answer is. So let's put Michael Porter Jr. in this draft class with the exact same injury issues as he had entering last year's draft. So everything's the same except Porter is now in this draft class. Where do you take him?
Yeah, do you take him ahead of Cam Reddish? That's a big question. I probably would take him ahead of Reddish. Porter I loved on the high school circuit, but then I really started to question like how much versatility he really had to his game, or was he more of just sort of like a tunnel vision scorer? Who knows what Michael Porter Jr. is going to be, and he'll be one of the more fascinating young prospects to track in the NBA over the next few years. I don't really know where I would take him. I mean, I'd probably take him over DeAndre Hunter. I'd probably take him over Darius Garland. Probably take him over Reddish. So at that point, is he a top five prospect? I think he would go higher in this draft than the last draft, because the last draft was just it was a lot deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what I was figuring, but I wanted to see how high you would go with him, and I think that's around what I expected. So again, thank you so much for coming on. I've learned a ton, and I'm sure all of our listeners have too. You can imagine, as Pelicans fans, we haven't really had a need to be that interested in this draft in recent years. And so this is definitely a change for us. And before we wrap up, just let everyone know where they can read or listen to your work.
Yeah, you can find all my work on the NBA draft, on college recruiting, and on college basketball in general at SBNation.com. And then you can listen to my Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Network, Cash Considerations.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
On Twitter, I'm at SBN_Ricky.
Awesome. Make sure to give him a follow, y'all.